Looks like we're all present. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Can you please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Please follow after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Announcements of action taken in closed session. By a unanimous roll call vote, the board approved resolution 2018-19/19, suspension without pay of classified employee, and authorize the superintendent or designee to issue the proper notice. Next, we have our student representative from MCAA, Petra Nabi. Is that pronounced correctly?
Nabi.
Nabi. I think Dr. Starkey just told me that and I didn't want to believe it.
So I have Marysville Charter Academies for the Arts School Report. On January 30th, the dance department will be holding a fundraiser at Panda Express from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. to raise money for future events. The freshman class will be selling Valentine grams for the first week of February and will be passing them out on Valentine's Day. The GSA Club is selling bracelets for $2 to fundraise for club t-shirts. Winter ball occurred on January 19th. This dance was put on by the juniors and was held at the fairgrounds. All funds will go directly to the class for their senior year. There was a great turnout and the class made around $2,000. The beginning drama show, Cinderella, will be held January 31st and February 1st at 7 p.m. and February 2nd and 3rd at 2 p.m. in the MYCC. Some advanced drama and theater tech club students will be attending the Linnea Festival for Drama in Folsom Lake College on February 1st to February 3rd. MCAA's advanced and intermediate dancers will be going to Disneyland to perform and take a Disney Masterclass February 14th through February 18th. On February 18th, they will be taking a private masterclass at Millennium Studio in LA. That is all.
Thank you very much. Next, we have our first presentation by Christy White and Associates. Do we have a representative? Of the 2017-18 Independent Audit Report.
Just use your arrow keys.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for having me here. I'm Heather Dowd Rubio. I'm the lead auditor for Marysville Joint Unified School District. You have a copy of the audit report, so I'm not going to go into detail of the financial information. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. What I'm going to do is go into the opinions we issued and some of the procedures that go into that. Okay? And so first, just to kind of give you a background, it's the school district's responsibility to have effective internal controls to prepare the financial statements and to prepare and manage the budget. What does the auditor do? We have an opinion on those financial statements, making sure they're materially correct. The opinion does not address the financial condition, but we do look a year out to make sure the district can continue. I do want to say we issued an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion you can get on your financial statements. So if you go to the next slide, page 2 in the audit report, the second paragraph states that in our opinion, we believe the financial statements are materially correct. That means we don't disagree with any of the numbers, and the numbers reported were correct. If we did have an issue, there'd be a paragraph after this describing that. Okay? So again, you have an unmodified opinion. In addition to that, we also look at your control over financial reporting. So how do you make sure the numbers are correct? You have to do bank recs for cash. You have to have a proper procedure for purchase orders to get your accounts payable correct, accounts receivable, you have to record it correctly, a cash receipt process. So we look at all those, and finally a journal entry process, which is the most important part of getting this correct. And we did come across one item we consider a significant deficiency, but we did not come across any material weaknesses. And again, you have an unmodified opinion. Okay? And the significant deficiencies described on page 87, and it's related to capital assets inventory. Do you guys have any questions about that? Okay.
I did. So it looks as though it had to do with building facility projects and putting the projects into the Escape financial software. Could you just explain that a little bit more?
Right. So your accounting, your fund statements are done on a modified accrual. So you're not looking at your capital assets. Basically, they're accounted for in the year they're expensed. But the government-wide, so full accrual accounting, requires that you track your capital assets. So what's happened is a lot of your capital assets are sitting in work in progress. And once those projects have been put into use, so an example would be you just built a new performing arts center for one of your schools. Once that project, once that's...
Thank you.
I just use that example. You built a science building.
Yeah, nice.
Once you put that project into use, you have to take it out of work in progress and put it into buildings and start depreciating that asset. What's happened here is they're all accounted for, but a lot of items are sitting in work in progress and need to be moved out of there, and they need to be put into the correct category, which would be buildings or land improvements or equipment, depending on what they are. I know the district has been working on this, and they've made some dent, but they are still working on it. There's a large amount there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Second, we have an opinion because you're a school district and you receive federal and state money. There are two more opinions we're required to issue. One of them is on your federal program. So this year we selected your child nutrition cluster, and this federal government gives us a whole audit program and what we have to look at. So here we're looking at the meal applications, the reimbursements, and the allowable expenditures using child nutrition funds. And I'm happy to report that you have an unmodified opinion, no significant deficiencies, and no material weaknesses. And the last opinion, one of the hardest places to not have a significant deficiency or material weakness, is state compliance. So the state puts out a number of procedures they want us to look at each year. So when you approve those Williams quarterly complaints or those SARC reports or your LCAP or Prop 39 funds, we're required to look at all that. And the state has specific procedures we look at. They also do not have a materiality threshold, so anything we come across, we have to report. And I am very happy to report that you guys have no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in this area, a really hard area to get kind of a perfect score on. So, okay. And there's only one more thing I just wanted to point out. Tons of numbers in here, but this is the one I'd like to point out because it's kind of the newer of the GASBs. Your long-term debt increased from last year, and the big piece of that is the last item, the net pension liability. So we just added that 2 years ago, and you can see it's a large liability on your books. So last year it was $90 million, it increased by $15.6 million, and now you're at $105 million for your STIRS and PERS liability. This is not a liability you can reduce, this is just a liability that has to be accounted for on your books. The only thing that's happening is the rates are increasing, and hopefully one day that'll start to go down. Okay? And that's all.
Any other questions or discussion? Or
just out of curiosity, if, in the last 10 years I've been looking at these audits, I know you can't rate them, but would you consider this an excellent audit? It sure seems to hit all the spots but one.
No, yes, it's a great audit. You guys are really proactive. So one of the big areas that we have a lot of trouble with is attendance and ASVs.
Yeah.
And every year you guys have us come out and train alternating years on ASB and attendance, and then your office asks all questions. They run everything through us. That's kind of like, is this right? Is this correct? You guys have great internal controls, so I will tell you that. So, and then everything we ask for gets provided in a timely fashion. We really appreciate it.
Thank
so you have
you
a great
much.
Business office. Pleasure
Thank
to work
you.
With.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have our school report, Oliverhurst Elementary School. Mr. Sullivan?
Good evening. I'll try to follow that wonderful audit report with a wonderful school report. Maybe not the same accountability, but we like to make sure 1 and 1 equals 2 as well. So here we go. I want to first thank you for giving us the opportunity again to share a little bit about what's going on in the South Side and at Olivehurst. You definitely hear about us for all kinds of reasons, and tonight we get to really focus on the things that make us smile every day. So here we go. So I was here last year, and it was my first year, and we talked about building a foundation. And so that's been a big part of our focus again this year. Not necessarily building the foundation, but adding to it. So the concrete's in, everything passed the test, and now we get to start framing and building the house. So part of that is how can we meet the needs of kids and staff even better? And one way to do that is by adding some key people and also keeping our focuses around the three most important parts: the school culture, the teaching and learning, and communication. So with that, we added a vice principal who I'd like to introduce tonight, Miss Jody Buda, who will be speaking a little bit to what she does. We added a student support specialist, Mr. Paul Schergel, and together we created something very special. It's called our Eagle's Nest. And if you know anything about our school, we are the Eagles, and everything we do is about creating a community. So the nest is kind of fitting. So in our nest, we put all of our resources together to take care of students. It's a student support center. So the teachers work on the academics, they work on the whole student, but then when you have those times where students need some extra help, we bring them into the nest and we help meet their needs. We also have our school psychologist who is a part of that process. So we really take care of kids where they're at that given moment. As you know, our kids have a lot of needs, not just academics, but social, emotional needs too. So we want to create that safe place for them. So Ms. Buda is going to share a little bit about what is the nest. And we got a cool video.
Could you move up to the mic a little more? Thank you.
I talk really loud all the time. But so people always ask us, what is the nest and what do you do in the nest? And so I kind of just created this little video. Oops, do you want to push this back? I'm not really technically inclined. Just to give you simplify what we do in the nest.
So as you know, our district and our school have really focused on our PBIS, the Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports, to create a culture and an environment where the positive is accentuated, it's sought out, it's explicitly taught, and we just believe that the more kids are choosing to do positive things, the less time they have for the negative stuff. So we have, with the help of Ms. Muda, really tried to up the game, so to speak. And so we are looking to pursue the Tier 2 silver ranking in the near future. Yes, and I do believe that comes with a plaque. So we will be working very hard to get that. So we are responsible, respectful, and ready to learn.
And so my role this year really was to really start with the PBIS and really focus on that. So my first thing what I did was to create a PBIS committee. And each teacher that represents a grade level is invited to attend that committee. After we did the committee, we created a PBIS staff handbook. And that's really a handbook in case something were to happen to Rich or I, or we move on, or we're replaced, whatever it may be. All of hers has a guideline of exactly the expectations, the three pillars that the committee helped design, which is the three that Rich just named. So they just guides the staff towards the PBIS mission, goals, and expectations for our students. We also created a student behavior management process, and that's revamping the referral process. And on the back of that referral process is the actual behavior management flow. So everyone is on the same page. We know exactly what happens when this happens, all the teachers, and we all work together. We created a golden spatula program. A lot of our teachers and cafeteria staff was saying the lunchroom is a real big problem for us. So we created the Golden Spatula Award, and if you can see on the picture, each table or grade level has a chance to win that golden ticket, and at the end of the month, whatever teacher's class has the most golden tickets, they get 10 minutes of extra recess, and I do the duty, so that means that the teachers actually get 10 extra minutes of lunch for themselves as well. So everyone loves that award. We also created different things to have alternatives to suspensions to help our suspensions lower. And that is, we created a triad. So each grade level has a classroom that's below them and a classroom that's above them. So if there's a behavior or a student that needs extra time on a test, instead of coming to the office or going to the nest, they go to a triad, a classroom that's either above or below to help with that. That just started rolling out. We do a check-in, check-out process for the students that need it. We have community service that has been a huge hit. Kids, we actually have the little vest. We have community service on the back. They help us rake leaves. They actually make a beautification of our campus, and they're part of that campus. We also have nest tickets for those kids that really need to come to the nest and visit us. They're actually little tickets that are given to the teachers, and they don't have to talk. They can just simply quietly go hand it to the teacher, and the teacher knows exactly where they're going, and then they come to me. We also do conflict management with a program we call Toolbox, and we also have Token Tower, so that really helps with our suspensions. The other area that we're really focusing on this year is our attendance and trying to reduce that chronic absenteeism. So we created attendance trophies, and in the picture, that was one of our teachers that has 100% attendance, and giving the award and trophy to that teacher and also for the students to help them own their attendance records. We also created staff celebrations during our staff meetings to help promote teamwork. We incorporated Teach Twos with lesson plans, and that is every week the entire school is teaching that particular expectation, whether it's playground expectations, bathroom expectations, classroom expectations, library expectations, whatever it is, it's on the staff newsletter that goes out, and the lesson plans are all in that PBIS staff handbook. Lastly, our newest thing that we added was our Swiss data software that helps us inform to make our decisions on the behaviors and the data and then our expectations. So we really rely on that.
So similar theme, building on the foundation already exists. One thing we did also this year is we created a school pledge. 50 plus years the school, we could find no record of a pledge or something that the kids dedicated themselves to. So this is something we do at all of our assemblies. We do it on our Friday morning announcements out on the blacktop. We recite the pledge. And so it's something that our PBIS committee came up with together, and it's been a real nice addition because it keeps us grounded in not only what we're doing, but then having a common language about it. So that PBIS has helped us build that community, okay? It's reduced those negative actions. Another huge change is our student leadership. It used to be called student government, but as we all know, we have student leaders on campus and they help model. So with the help of our illustrious leader, Ms. Kovach, she is leading our student government or student leadership on all things about how to lead around school. So they have taken on a big leadership role. So you want data? Well, we have some data. You're going to see a presentation very soon that shows you the California State Dashboard. Well, I'm going to give you a sneak peek from because it's pretty cool. When it talks about our behavior and the one way that the state of California looks at behavior, suspensions. And if you see, ours is in the blue. That's as high as you can get. And that's not just because we don't suspend students. It's because we find all different ways to give consequences. Our kids still get consequences. But as a dad, and we're both parents, we never once shipped our kids across to the neighbor's house when they got in trouble. We kept them at home and we teach them the right way to act. We also tell them what we want them to do and they do it. And so that's the most important part of why this data reflects this. It's not a lack of something, it's a change in how we do things. So blue is good. As always, we're all averse and we're going to speak about the shining example of our culture, and that is our school garden. And our springtime celebration morning in the garden, you're all invited once again. This year, Ms. Buddha has put in for and received a grant, a farm-to-table grant. So we actually have some money and we have a mission. And so I want to speak to what the expectation is for our students and classes.
Sure. So the expectation was farm to table. So we are going to have each grade level will have a box. And so they're going to have an ingredient. So each grade level is going to create an ingredient. And then we are all going to put it together in a pasta salad or a green salad. And then we will all eat as a team. So we're really looking forward to that and excited.
We'll still have our salsa. So, Jimmy, don't worry about that. We still make the salsa. So, being a part of a community is all day, every day. It's not something we just do prior to, someone coming and watching. It's not something we do 180 days. It's something we do every day. And we try to teach our kids and families that this is part of who you are, not just what you're pretending or having to do. So, how does it translate into teaching and learning? Well, it directly translates, because as kids feel a part of something, they pay attention to something. And so when it comes to what we're doing as a staff, we're continuing with our work in the PLCs because we're creating and sustaining and nurturing our own communities in how we learn and get better at what we do. We look at our assessment data. Just like with our behaviors, we look at the data of where things are happening, when they're happening, and then we create consequences and or strategies to address it. Same thing with our math and language arts needs. We then created common times, for all grade levels to provide individualized instruction. We call it our soar time. We're the eagles, we soar. So during this time, we have leveled instructional time. So kids based on their reading level now go together with kids in the same level. And we have all of our resources available because we've scheduled these times without conflicts. So first grade soar time, we have multiple adults going to the three classrooms to provide assistance. And so we're able to break classes and into smaller groups. So we have groups as small as 10 and some groups in 16, and we're able to meet kids at their level. So all eagles soar. Here's some data. So again, you're going to see this. We were able to increase in both math and language arts. We were orange in the dashboard last year, and now we have moved up to yellow in both because we've increased. We still have a long way to go when it comes to meeting standard. We're still approaching that. But all you can do is ask your staff and students is to grow and see some evidence of their work. So we're pretty excited that within that 1 year, we grew an entire, you know, orange to yellow, whatever you want to call it. So we've also continued with our communication to help get our families involved. We have our parent newsletters once a month. Our staff newsletters go weekly. And then Ms. Buddha introduced this.
And so a lot of teachers use Class Dojo, and so we incorporated it, School Dojo. And so we currently right now have 522 families that like anything that we put on there. That's how many likes we have so far. We have 374 parents that are currently connected, 492 students that are currently connected, and 18 of our teachers are currently using this consistently. So these are all things that go out to the parents. We can do school-wide, I can do photos. I've done videos of the kids that are singing during, you know, the holiday time. I did a video out so some of the parents that could not be there, they're able to see their students sing. Those are 2,405 messages so far this year that have gone out to our parents. So it's been a real huge hit. It's 73% positive feedback right now. I'm hoping to increase that and hoping to get most, if at least not 95% of our parents on board.
The thing that's most exciting is we have 500 students and we have 492 of our students connected. So even our TK students all the way up to sixth grade, this is a way for them to use technology to connect with their teacher in their school. So the messages are varying. You know, your TK students aren't contemplating, you know, the latest literature, but they are interacting. And so it's been a very positive way that we teach the correct use of technology, but then keep that open communication to home. So we have created a community built around these focus areas, and it's the staff, students, and families that make it all happen. So we hope you see evidence, we know you will, when you come and visit, and we hope to see you all very soon. So thank you for letting us share a little bit, and are there any questions?
I don't have a question, but I would like to say to you all that I really enjoyed the part that you have set the students up for something positive. When they don't act as the way that they should at school, they do have a second chance to make a better impression. And I really thank you all for giving them that chance and that opportunity. Thank you.
Is just out of curiosity, it's amazing, 492 students are plugged into School Dojo. The eight that aren't, is it because there's no computer access or they're just nasty little boogers? I don't, just curious. Are you connected like with Facebook? I'm sort of old school.
So the way that they're connected is either through a telephone number, their cell phone, or their laptops.
Okay.
So there's no Facebook, there's no other outside social media.
That's good.
And this is private. They actually have to sign in, be authorized by a parent, and a cell phone telephone number in order to connect with us.
You knew what I was getting at. Now, one more question. Do you permit interaction with their cell phones during school time?
No, we don't.
Okay. I wasn't trying to set you up.
No, that's because we have a...
Good answer, though.
Well, the reason is we have one-to-one device for all of our students. So they all have an electronic device at their disposal at school.
Yeah.
So there's no need to bring an outside device. And the accounts are all online-based. They're web-based. So you can access them at any time. So while we're at school, we use the devices we have. We can easily monitor them and make sure they're all doing it to the level we want.
And they can stay connected 24/7, whether at home or at school.
Yeah.
That is excellent. That really is. And it gives them a whole insight into what the world is gradually going to. Thank you. Good job.
I would like to thank you for the data you presented. It really tells a lot when you can look at data. You know, it's nice to put a dog and pony show, but when you see the data, it kind of gives the board an understanding of what's going on, and we can see where you are, and it looks like you're really doing a good job. Thank you. I know some of these schools are hard, so I commend you.
I would just also like to say thank you, Ms. Buda and Mr. Sullivan, for all that you're doing. They're making great strides there at all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's work on those eight. Thank you.
Next, we have comments from the board members. Ms. Scott?
I would just like to say that I hope that everyone had a nice, peaceful, restful vacation for the last couple of weeks. I'm so glad to see everyone back. Thank you.
Mr. Davis? Mr. Allison? Mr. Boom?
Yeah, just one quick comment. I'd like to thank Mr. Hodson and his team for the audit report. Excellent job. Thank you. Jennifer, thank you very much. You guys did a wonderful job, as always.
Yeah.
Mr. Fleury?
The school accountability report cards. I had some questions, and today I met with Gay and Mr. Hodson and Jamie, because when you look at the report cards, they're all different. I wanted where the data could be collated, where you could look at them. And I understand for the suspension rate, there's going to be a note in our board packet from Jolie showing how the suspensions, school by school, we can look at. Then I had some questions about the maintenance reports, schools that were listed poor. And Mike came in and brought the binder in and explained it to me. And then the scores, and I understand that tonight Lenny's going to give the scores. But I was impressed when they came in the fact that Jamie came in, and I'm always impressed what Jamie's office does for the homeless. They really work hard for the homeless, and I've heard quite a bit, because I know some of them in the area, because I work in the orchards in the summertime where a lot of them live, and they really appreciate the homeless project, which we have, because a lot of these people are in that situation through situation of their own, and Jamie, you really do a good job in your office with them, and you are appreciated. Also, I would like to commend David Jones for getting an award on the 28th of February, I believe. Is it 28th?
Surprise.
It's not. No, they know. They're telling them. But you know what? It's good when we can reward or let our people know. We have to deal with negativity in the district, but the more positive we have, the better it is. Also, I would like to, I just found out tonight, Yvonne Sanchez was telling me that her husband got an award for Placer County. Yeah. Was the classified person of the year. And I know that we're gonna feed into the county. Where are we on that, Gay? Feeding into the county of the classified and our certificated, we're allowed to this year?
It's going to be happening in May, so we are moving through the process. Sites are nominating their new teachers, their tenured teacher season folks, as we like to call them, and also classified. So they're busy going through those nomination processes at their site. They'll forward their top candidates to the district. That selection will be made, and then we'll all go to the dinner and honor them in May.
Last year, some of us went to it was too late for us to do it last year, but I think three of us went to the dinner when they honored from other districts, and it was really a big event, and it's going to be nice this year. Also, I have the flag ceremony. We're going to do a flag ceremony at Edgewater on the February, in which the Lions Club is going to buy each one of them, give each one of the students an individual flag, and we're working with that. And it's really good they can understand in these times that we need to honor our flag, and we need to honor what servicemen have done for their country. And finally, I'd like to leave you with a little quote. And I've been looking at trust, and I've been talking to my kids about it. And trust is the glue that makes any organization thrive. And to thrive, you got to have trust. That's it.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford.
Well, I learned 12 years ago I should go ahead of Mr. Fleury because he steals all my material. No, not really. I've mentioned this before, but I had the privilege of reading a published article, I believe, once again from our security team, Mr. Julie Carrion, last month about the response times. And what was the name of that journal, Julie, that you were written in? Well, you were quoted in. And once again, I'm not putting you on the spot. It was excellent.
Well, I think you are, Mr. Crawford.
Yeah, I think so. She's raising her hand saying, why'd you do that? I'm not trying to embarrass you. Well, no, actually, it was...
But it was very well written, Jolie. Thank you.
It was a newsletter Lisa sent home to us, and it was very, very complimentary. You're welcome. That's all. I will not single anybody else out.
I would also just like to welcome everyone back, and I'd like to echo Mr. Boom's sentiment also with regards to our audit. Thank you very much with regarding that. The other thing I would like to say is it's just great to get to see our staff and our community partners over the holidays. Was able to attend some of our functions that fed some of our families, and it's just amazing with regards to what Marysville Joint Unified and our partners, our community partners, do for our kids. It's just wonderful. So thank you for all your efforts in doing that. Next, we have opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association, Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3, California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648, Association of Management and Confidential Employees, Supervisory Unit. Public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to the maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. We have no public comments. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Dr. Starkey?
Thank you. We're going to start off by asking our two athletic trainers to do a brief report for the board. As you will remember, several years ago in the LCAP, it was identified that we truly needed to have some athletic trainers who are working with our students and some of our staff. And Mr. Carrion found them, finally, and they're here.
Actually, I'd like to say that I found them. I think they found us. And without really stealing their time or their thunder, but just an amazing pair of individuals who sought to put together a quality program, not a high school quality program, but a college level program. And given the limited resources and other things that were frankly at their disposal with the help of the purchasing department, Mr. Hodson's approvals and the funds that were appropriated, they've taken that idea and dream of theirs, and they are, with a little bit more time, going to surpass college-level types of services. So with that, I want to introduce Daniel Desmond and Austin Parr, who their service level already far exceeds any high school and certainly parallels some junior colleges and going to further heights. Thank you, gentlemen, in advance. The floor is yours.
Hi, my name is Daniel Desmond. I received my master's in athletic training from the University of Idaho. Prior to that, I received my bachelor's in kinesiology from San Francisco State University. I'm a board certified athletic trainer. I got my clinical experience from Stanford University, University of Idaho, and Southwestern University in Texas.
My name's Austin Parr, the other athletic trainer. I went to the same program with Daniel for my master's in athletic training, and then before that was at Eastern Washington for my bachelor's in exercise science, board-certified athletic trainer, and a certified strength and conditioning coach. Had a similar level of experience within the college and high school setting as Daniel. Let me just press there.
Without reading the mission statement word for word, essentially, like Mr. Carrion had said, we strive to provide collegiate-level health care to a high school setting. Obviously, winning and success is important, but our main goal is to protect our student-athletes and provide health care on the field and off the field. We want to cultivate a culture that develops these athletes and gives them the tools that they need, not only when they're on the field during their high school careers, but tools and habits that they can take with them for the rest of their lives.
Before we talk about the athletic training department, I think we should shore up what an athletic trainer is, because a lot of people remember that from the 70s, and it was some dad that would coach ankles or tape ankles in a closet. But an athletic trainer is actually an allied healthcare professional. We're on par with, let's say, a physical therapist or a nurse in their respective fields. So we are charged with and licensed to evaluate, diagnose, treat, and discharge musculoskeletal injuries as well as concussions. We have acute care management skills, so a kid starts bleeding out on the field or breaks a bone or has a skin infection, we have the wherewithal to act. And then we also screen kids before season for musculoskeletal deficiencies, and then in preseason, like strength and conditioning, we try to act and shore up some of those to mitigate risk of injury in season. When me and Dan first got hired on to the school district, we did a needs analysis of where our attention needed to be put, and we realized that the first and foremost thing that was needed was emergency action plans for every sports venue. And so right away we worked on creating something for the weight room, for the clinic, and for every field and court that was on campus, ended up doing that and completing them.
We also saw the need for environmental hazard policies so that every school administrator and coach was clearly aware of when and when not it was safe to perform sport outside. With concussions being such a hot topic issue in the country, we saw the need for preseason concussion evaluations for all at-risk sports. We were able to baseline data at the beginning of the season, so if and when a concussion occurs, we can compare that data. That allows us to determine, rule in, rule out a concussion, but also monitor their progress as we get them to return to play.
Another one was creating an allied healthcare team. A lot of the times, high school kids don't have the resources or their families don't have the resources for healthcare, but me and Daniel also have a specific scope of practice and we need to be able to refer out when it's out of our hands. So we've gone around to local physicians and physical therapists and started creating relationships, and we now have a sports orthopedic surgeon who's working directly with us, and we have physical therapists who, when we have a kid that gets injured, they'll see them the next day. They'll take whatever insurance they have. If they don't have insurance, they'll come out to our clinic to work with them. And that was a big thing, because sometimes a torn ACL is a torn ACL. I can't do anything about it, and I need it seen. And if they don't have insurance, it still needs to get figured out. So we were able to find a great orthopedic surgeon who's very charitable. Another thing, when we were looking at CIF and the CEC, like codes and policies for safe sports, we kind of realized that it was rudimentary at best for what we had learned was standard practice. So we checked all those boxes, but then we went on to NATA, the National Athletic Training Association, and they have like a gold standard checklist of what a high school or college should do if they consider themselves a safe sports school. And we started working away at it, and then when we got close enough to the end, we decided, well, let's just apply for the award because we did it. So we're in the process of the application and hopefully getting awarded for the next 3 years to be considered safe sports schools.
Since Austin and I have gotten onto both campuses, each team is afforded the opportunity to take part in off-season strength and conditioning. So what that would look like, basketball being a winter sport, the entire program comes to us in August, and we do a collegiate level structured strength and conditioning program all the way up till their season starts. This helps coaches obviously, you know, figure out who's trying to develop their athletic potential, also develops camaraderie, but as we talked about before, we're trying to prevent injury, and one of the main ways that we can do so is shore up tissue integrity in the weight room. Probably the biggest thing that we've done so far is made Marysville High School and Lyndhurst High School both clinical rotation sites for graduate schools around the country. We currently have a grad student at Marysville and Lyndhurst from the University of Idaho. We went there, and so every year we will be recruiting graduate students to come help for free and get their clinical rotation hours and gain experience as they strive for a graduate level degree in athletic training.
Since we take the data for how many times we see kids, how we treat them, different baseline concussion stuff we do, we figured we would monetize it and look at what the going rate is on average around the public and put it together and realize that we, so far, middle of winter season, had provided around $87,000 worth of healthcare services. And so how that can occur is, as an example, we had a girl who a couple weeks ago tore her ACL. We referred her to our orthopedic surgeon. He imaged it, said she's going to need surgery, and on average, that's a 9-month rehab. The first 3 months, visiting a physical therapist for 3 times a week, then 2 times a week, the next 3 months, then 1 time a week, the last 3 months for a total of 9 months. That would cost a family $5,000 on average in PT costs, whereas when they're working with us, they will get the same exact rehab. We'll be in direct communication with their orthopedic surgeon. We're in communication with their parents. Their parents don't have to do what we do. They can decide to take them onto a physical therapist, but if they do, we can save them $5,000 just in PT costs alone.
So one of the things that we're really proud of is we've been working with administrators in the district and at each school to develop collegiate level athletic training clinics at both high schools. These clinics are filled with, you know, orthopedic examination tables, taping tables, stocked full of prophylactic and acute care management equipment. We have weight equipment for rehabilitation and also computers that we can document injury and keep medical records.
And then in the next couple of years, kind of our future plans for the athletic training department is to streamline our referral system, so to work more with relationships we have within the community of clinicians and have more of a direct line. So our sports orthopedist right now will take a kid in. He'll make time in his schedule, but to find physical therapists that are maybe willing to cut a break for our kids because they're referred through us or see him quicker, develop maybe more general physician relationships when we have like skin diseases and wrestling or something and we need it to be looked at right away. We also plan on by the end of this year to finish our clinics and, as Dan said, have collegiate level athletic training clinics, and that's not a joke. We've both been at multiple colleges, and these will look just like that. And these kids, I don't think, realize how cool these clinics actually are. And then lastly, with the preseason weights, injuries are fun to rehab and all, but stopping them is more important from ever happening, and that's where me and Dan have put so much effort into preseason strength and conditioning and evaluations. But it does take up our time. It is within our scope and something we do, but it takes up time. And so we want to look at maybe exploring, trying to go down to Sac State and find like a undergrad who just graduated in kinesiology and is going into their master's and they need experience, and maybe create a stipend position or something with Sac State to have maybe 2 legitimate strength coaches who that's all they worry about.
aside from having graduate students from the University of Idaho, we have a contact with Mesa University in Colorado, and we just like to, you know, broaden the pool of graduate students we're able to recruit to Marysville and Lyndhurst. Every school has their own ideas as to, you know, how to be a clinician, and every school has different specialties in, you know, the realm of athletic training. So we just like to widen that pool of students that we can recruit from. And the overarching theme of what we want to do at Marysville and Lyndhurst is develop a culture within athletics that breeds athletes who can find their way into colleges. We are, you know, essentially just providing the tools that they need to, you know, learn how to work hard and learn how to, realize their own individual athletic potential. We don't want, you know, this idea of the kids who are able to move on and go and play in college is just the kids that were lucky enough to have parents that could afford to do so. We want every kid to have an opportunity, and, you know, since day one, we've kind of preached that to them. And that's essentially our presentation, if you have any questions.
Any comments?
I have a question. What kind of participation rate are you getting with your strength and conditioning off-season program?
It initially, because we were new, was lower. So like in the summer, it was 5 kids. And then we're like with football. And then in the fall, we got 30 kids in football. And then for preseason fall, it started out with a couple kids, and then we get coach buy-in behind it, and coaches start asking, hey, I think this is important. And now it's to the point full teams are coming out and holding each other accountable, and that's something we try to push on them, is I don't want to be the one holding you accountable. I want you guys to have a brotherhood or sisterhood and hold each other accountable. And it's happening. It's not a one-year thing to get every athlete to come out, but it has exponentiated just in the 3 rounds we've had so far.
Yeah, that's great. It, you know, it'd be nice, hopefully, the high school principals, which I'm sure you guys are really supporting this, and talking to your coaches that get them to help them participate. The strength and conditioning is huge. I had a major injury when I was in high school, and something like this would have been great. I mean, I've got scars on my leg that are 18 inches long because of it. You know, and the stuff they do these days is just phenomenal. And, you know, something like that would have gone a long ways back then. But then the financial part that you guys are providing, I mean, that was huge when I was in high school. And for you guys to be able to, you know, offset a lot of that and help those students out, I think this is going to be a wonderful thing for the student athletes. And, you know, maybe it'll even get more kids involved in the athletics and keep them in school. So, thank you.
You had mentioned the 60s and how prehistoric we really were. Much like Jeff, I participated in wrestling in high school and football, and the protocol for concussions were the backfield coach would say, how many fingers do I got up? And
you just got your bell rung.
If you got within 3 of the 5, he put you back in the game. But things didn't change much at Long Beach City College. As a wrestler, you'd get 2 minutes for a bloody nose. They would just keep cramming cotton up your nose and wiping the blood off you. And I don't want to get grotesque, but do you still use smelling salts? I mean, then the coach would hit you with smelling salts and then push you back out of the mat.
Not really anymore.
It's hard to believe, but in the 60s, the coaches encouraged you not to drink water on the football field. I know you guys must have.
Yeah, no, that's not still done.
Okay, well, I'm going to move up a couple decades and quit giving away how old I am. I usually lie about it, so I forget what my age is now. But we didn't have weight training in those days either, so you guys really are buffed, and rightly so. Daniel, do you incorporate your Brazilian jiu-jitsu in any of your practices with the kids, just out of curiosity?
Incorporate it with wrestling a little bit.
Cool.
General grappling. The kids love that I do it myself, yeah. So it gives some buy-in for sure. But aside from that, no, I don't choke any of the kids.
Okay, and I assume now you don't, you mentioned the taping of the ankles. Coach Brown and I would spend an hour right before every meeting taping ankles. I did a horrible job. I think I ruined more ankles than I did, right? Coach Brown was really good at it. You guys actually tape everything? Do all the taping for the coaches?
We do tape what needs to be taped. We also don't just blanket tape everyone anymore because we kind of realized that ankle taping doesn't stop ankle rolls so much. It loosens up after about 10, 15 minutes is what the research shows. So it's kind of a waste of money, really.
Well, thank you for the knowledge, and I'm glad to hear you're not using smelling salts anymore. Thank you.
Any other comment?
I would like to say welcome to MJUSD, and I'd like to find out also who will decide who will travel. Will you travel with the team? Will you travel with Marysville? And you'll travel with Lyndhurst, and who'll decide if we have games on both of those, the nights that you're going to do it, who's going to go where?
Well, so athletic training is so broad in scope that you could be a coverage AT, where all you do is cover practice and games. Or you could be a purely clinical AT, where all you do is sit in a clinic and work on injuries. Me and Dan are kind of a hybrid in that we think rehabbing the kids adequately so they don't have an 18-inch scar that bugs them the rest of their life is important, but at the same time, we have to cover things. So like football games, every football game is covered. I cover all the football games at Lyndhurst. Dan covers all the football games at Marysville. The rest of the school year, we play it off of what's the most at risk, what works with the schedule, what hasn't received much attention. So it's really a juggling thing that occurs in high school that, like, in college, I would be just the swim AT. And so I would just cover all the swim meets.
Does that mean we're going to win more games? Thank you.
Yes.
Maybe we'll have more athletes being able to participate in those games for the winning factor.
Great make it to have the you end guys aboard. It's really, could have used you a couple decades ago, believe me.
I probably wasn't born.
Thanks again. How did you both come from Idaho? Boy, I can't get enough of this. How'd you find Marysville?
So I went to Marysville High School, and I graduated in 2011. Really long story how I made it to University of Idaho. I'm sure it's just as long for Austin. But we saw the opportunity of being able to start something from scratch, being... you know, not only awesome for this community that I grew up in, but also incredibly valuable for us as professionals. So for us to be able to start our career starting from scratch, taking on everything that comes your way as a professional, it's unbelievable that we actually have this opportunity.
That's the school with the blue football field, right?
No, that's Boise State.
Boise State. Yeah.
No, we're in the Dome in Moscow,
right.
Idaho.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, Daniel Austin, I would also like to welcome you and thank you for being here. And Mr. Carrion, you're probably part of this, but we've actually had this position in the LCAP ever since I've been on the board, unable to fulfill it. So it's just very exciting to hear what you're doing for our students at our site. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Welcome to the company.
We're done?
Oh, yes.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Next on the docket, we have the Lenny Tate and Amy Stratton show. The board identified goals for the superintendent this last year. One of them was to bring the annual California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress data to the board, specific to not only Marysville Joint Unified, but to three schools that were identified as having some difficulties, Olivehurst Elementary, Cedar Lane Elementary, and Yuba Gardens Intermediate. So tonight, they're going to give you a recap of how the district did, and then look just briefly at how those three sites have done over the past year. And with that, Lenny Tate.
Good evening. And the person who's going to carry this load is Amy Stratton. Amy spends quite a deal of her time out at the school sites, working with the sites and understanding the state accountability system, as well as looking at data from the state accountability system and the formative assessments that the teachers are building at the school sites. She works in helping them understand how to load those into Illuminate, how to look at them on a regular basis in collaboration with the site professional learning communities that are out there. And with that said, she is going to do exactly what Gay said and speak to the three schools and the district that we've been working with over the course of the year through the district and their professional learning communities. And so with that said, here is Amy Stratton.
Good evening. I'm a little short. This is just a bird's eye view. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but all this data is available to the public. If you just Google CDE dashboard, you could search any school and just kind of go in deeper and find all the details. So this is just an overview. I do want to talk about first what the state measures are. There are six state measures that allow for comparisons across the schools and districts based on the statewide data. We'll look at academic performance, which is your CASP scores, your language arts and math. We'll look at chronic absenteeism, that is kids who are absent 10% or more, the suspension rate, our English learner progress, college or career ready, and our graduation rate. The results are presented to all district schools in the defined student groups. So you can look at it as a school, you can look at it all the way down to all the different subgroups. You need to be aware that the performance is based on an average of a two-year comparison. They look at the current measures and then they look for improvement from the year before. So when we look at the data, it's always already presented as a comparison. So that what we talk about tonight is how the schools either increased or decreased. CDE has made a change to the dashboard. Instead of showing just colors on a pie, they actually created gauges. So think of a gas tank. So it kind of shows you how schools are doing. They'll get one of five colors that indicates their performance. Okay, so hopefully we want the gas tank to be full. As I said earlier, the academic performance is based on language arts and math. The students are tested on the CASP in grades 3 through 8 and 11th. Chronic absenteeism is the number of students that are absent 10% or more. So if a student is only enrolled in our school for 40 days, they could still be chronic absent if they were absent 4 or more of those days. So every kid that's in our school will count. The suspension rate is the percent of students that are suspended at least one time. So once they've been suspended, they're part of this rate. They don't get counted twice. So it's the number of kids that are suspended at least once. Our old language arts test, the CELT test, has gone away. It's been replaced with what's called the LCAP. The LPAC, the English Language Proficiency Assessment, that is now administered in the spring. It used to be in the fall. We've only had one administration of it, so when we look at the data, you will not have a color because 2 years doesn't exist, and it's always a comparison of 2 years. College or career indicators. This is the first year we'll have a color. This I will show you a graph later on the presentation on how students become college or career readiness. This is the first year we'll have color, so we'll see how well we're growing or not growing. And then, of course, our graduation rate, which we're very familiar with that. The first school we're going to look at is Cedar Lane. Cedar Lane, when you look at this slide, how you're going to read it as they're orange, which is moving along. But what's interesting to look at is how far above or below the standard they are, and then how much they've increased. Those are the two numbers we're going to focus on. So Cedar Lane, there's a threshold of what's considered proficient. You could grow above the threshold or you could stay below the threshold. In language arts, Cedar Lane was 83 points below the threshold, but what's important to notice is that they actually increased by 4.5 points from the year before. So they're moving in the right direction. And in math, there are 80.2 points below the standard, and they maintain, which means statistically they didn't make a significant enough change to either call it a decrease or an increase. They've just maintained. And then, of course, you can see their first year of their English language progress data. This is just their first year. And again, next year, we will get a color for the first time. Chronic absenteeism, this is the first year we get a color. So we've only been gathering this data for 2 years. Both chronic absenteeism and suspension rate, if you think about it, we actually want the data to go down, not up. So when you in these two indicators, you actually want it to say decline. So for Cedar Lane, they actually did decline by 1.4%. And in suspension, they also declined by 2%. So again, that's the direction we actually want the students, the school, to start performing. When we dig a little deeper and we start looking at the subgroups, I'm only going to focus on the subgroups that are in the red. So if you remember the gauges, the red is the bottom. We're really low in that gas tank. And I'm looking at the subgroups that actually did not, that actually had what I would call negative growth. They grew in the wrong direction. They lost ground. And so there's only three areas that we're concerned about in terms of moving backwards. In the academic indicators, students with disability declined in language arts. In chronic absenteeism, our white subgroups are having some problems with their attendance. And with our suspension rate, our students with disabilities and our Hispanic groups were suspended more the year before. Looking at Olivehurst, as we learned from our presentation earlier today, they are 61 points below the basic threshold of performance in language arts, but they increased 3.4 points. In mathematics, they're 70.8 points below standard, but they also increased 4.5 points. And again, you can see where their baseline is for their English language progress. For chronic absenteeism, they did increase by 2%. So this last year, they had more students absent than the prior year, and their suspension rate declined by 3.9%. Again, looking at the subgroups that are in the red, our most needy students, and that they had their data going in the wrong direction, they only had an academic indicator for their students with disabilities in both language arts and mathematics. Our third school we're looking at, Yuba Gardens. Their Yuba Gardens for language arts were 69.6 points below standard, and that was an increase of 12.9 points, which was a significant increase. In mathematics, there are 107.4 points below standard, and they maintained with a 2.3 increase. Again, statistically, that wasn't enough to move them up, so they stayed in the maintained band. And then again, you can see how they're doing with their English learner progress. Chronic absenteeism was an increase of 0.8%. So again, they had more students absent, more than 10%. And their suspension rate also increased 1.2%. Looking at the subgroups, like we've did with our other schools, the academic indicator, their Asian subgroup declined in mathematics. For chronic absenteeism, their students with disabilities. Suspension rate, their English learners, socioeconomic disadvantage, students with disabilities in the white subgroup had increased suspensions. Looking at Marysville Joint Unified, we're going to look at all the indicators. We haven't talked about college or career or graduation because we didn't talk about our high schools, but we will talk about that with Marysville. Overall, for language arts, we are 39.1 points below standard, and we increased 3.7 points. For mathematics, we're 62.9 points below standard, and we increased 3.3 points. And again, you can see where we are at the start of our English language progress indicator. Our chronic absenteeism as a district also increased by 0.5%. So as a district, that is a concern. And our suspension rate, we maintained by negative 0.2 points. So we basically suspended about the same number of kids over the last 2 years. Before I talk about our last two indicators, I do want to take this time to point out that California has had what they called a new business rule for graduation indicator. This is specifically to our comprehensive high schools. The federal government has made a request to California to change how they do the calculation. And we, of course, as California, had to make that change. And so they've adjusted how they calculated the four-year adjusted cohort. And so basically what they've done for high school is they're no longer allowing high schoolers to get credit for graduating if they transfer to an adult education or a community college. And so what happens is we used to be able to count those students as graduates. We no longer can. And so because of that, the CDE estimates that those two changes will result in a 2 to 3% decrease statewide in the graduation rate. So we were kind of expecting, in terms of how much that actually impacted us, but we were expecting a decline. And so we're not actually surprised by that. Also, the last page of your handout, there is a graphic from CDE that shows the different pathways that kids could become college career ready. And so it's a combination of courses or tests that they could take, and there's multiple pathways that will help get our kids to that point. And so you can look at that at your leisure. So as a district on college and career, we did decline 2%. So if we had fewer kids that were college or career ready this last year than the year before. And also, as expected, our graduation rate did decline by 1.4%. If we look at the subgroups with the red gauges, our most needy kids, looking for the neediest kids that did not move in the direction they should have. For language arts, would be our foster youth. For mathematics, it's our African American. Chronic absenteeism, it's our African American and homeless. Suspension rate is our African American. College or career is our white subgroup. And our graduation rate was with students with disabilities. Questions?
Any comments or questions from the board?
And if you have questions for Amy, she's here. Carrie Iles from Yuba Gardens, Jill Segner from Cedar Lane, and Rich Sullivan from Olivehurst are here as well. We have been meeting. We met at the beginning of the semester, and we are meeting again later this month to monitor the plans that they put in place that I've shared with you. It's no easy task to move in the right direction, but they are making progress and making some substantial changes to help improve the learning environment for our students.
Well, I do think that what Dr. Starkey, you say, it's a process. It's not going to happen overnight. And it certainly, I think, with a lot of our PLCs that we have going now, and doing our remediation with students, I think it can only help. So it certainly is a process. And Amy, thank you. That's very eye-opening to get to see those results. And, you know, as she said earlier, if you have any questions regarding any school site, you can go onto the dashboard and look at those same things.
So I think it's more sobering when you see that GAS gauge acronym. Is that going to be, yeah, we haven't filled the tank much.
We have to also remember that the state's accountability system is, it's not... Our last accountability system was we wanted 100% of the students proficient by whatever year that was. The accountability system now that's in place is we're always looking for improvement. As long as we are making the improvements in the directions we're making, we're doing what we need to do.
I just meant at first impact, looking at the first gate.
Yeah.
Running on empty, it just looks like, you know.
Yeah, well, those colors, remember the 5x5? I just want to bring some light. That's where
years,
those...
Everything seems to change every decade, and then they go back to it again.
Right. Yeah. And so it's about a growth model. We're looking for growth. Right. And as long as we have growth, that gas gauge will keep moving.
Keep going up. Finally, got a half a tank.
So, Amy, just one other thought is, with regards to graduation rate, and it said that our subpopulation of the disability students was, even though students can be enrolled until age 22 with regards to getting that graduation, is it on an annual basis even? How's that work if it's like a fifth or sixth year senior that's
We get
still
penalized
there?
For it.
What's but that?
We get penalized. Kids have 4 years to graduate. Any student that is on the five-year plan will penalize her. That's part of our graduation rate. We don't get credit for that.
I see.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
An SDC child still gets to go to 22, right?
Yes, they could still go. They could still get their degree and any certificates. But once they pass, any student that enters the ninth grade, they have 4 years to complete their, And so we educate kids like we're supposed to, but they are counted as a non-graduate.
I didn't misspeak with SDC. That's the current acronym. Has it changed?
I guess still. Any other comments?
But the expectation is they will graduate in 4 years, and
yes.
If they take
right.
a semester longer or a year longer, it counts against us.
It counts against us. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Well done.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good presentation.
Thanks.
I know for our principals to be successful, it's important to have the tools. And I remember one of our business managers said, if you want people to be successful, you've got to give them the tools. And I know Yuba Gardens has a great staff out there. They work hard, but I also know the crowding is a real problem. And if any of us have been out there, if you looked at it, it's horrible when you see the number of kids. So, Carrie, you guys are doing a great job with the crowding you have there. And it's up to the district to find out a plan, what we're going to do to help them. Thank you.
Any other comments? Thank you very much.
And I just had one last thing. I wanted to welcome our new panel of principals. Two of them are returning guests, John Kovach and Rich Sullivan. They get to have a second turn because they're being evaluated for a second year. And the new face in the crowd is not really new, but it is Joe Seiler, who is our interim principal at McKinney Intermediate. So welcome to all three of you.
Yes. Next we have Superintendent. Approval of minutes from the regular board meeting of 12/11/18. If there's no additions or deletions, we'll entertain a motion.
I do have a correction on the consent agenda items.
We're doing the minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm jumping the gun. I was so excited to have another speaking part.
I move to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye. Any nays? 7 yes. Motion carries. Next, we have the consent agenda. Dr. Starkey.
Now. Okay. Got it. The name in the first paragraph on the agreements with Al Valdez and Dora Dome on pages 4 and 15, respective, in the special reports have been corrected, so I just wanted to make note of that. So it is correct in the minutes and in your materials in front of you.
Did you say page 14? Yes. Thank you.
15.
I also just wanted to point out, make sure the board members realize or at their table they had the new SARC reports for the high schools. You could add to your SARCs. Are there any items that would like to be pulled off the consent agenda? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any nays? 7 yes. Motion carries. Next we have new business. Buildings and Grounds Department. Change order number 1 with JK Architecture Engineering for the Edgewater Portable Project. Mr.
Sure. I can talk to that a little bit. Change orders tend to get sort of a bad reputation, but remember that in Edgewater's case, we were
really trying to build the airplane as it's rolling down the flight, rolling down the runway. And so what we did was we brought forward to the board the buildings while we were still examining options we might have to do the drop-off. And so rather than sit there and admire the problem for a long time, we went ahead and with the first part. This is the follow-up. We figured out where we could do the turnout and the drop-off in a way that's compliant. And so this is that second part. And we may have a couple more just in the way we were doing this to get it done quickly. There are bits that are going to feel a little bit piecemeal, but that was by design in order to accomplish our goal of getting them in quicker.
So, Mr. Hodson, is this drop-off and pickup going to be in the same parking lot as Edgewater, or is it going to be off the road itself?
It is. It'll be over. We have a depiction I can show you, but it's just off the parking lot there in front of the administration. We looked at doing it off Oakwood a little bit, but the permitting required to do that, the traffic studies required to do that, some of the flow, there really isn't an optimum place. This seemed to be the lesser of the evils, so to speak.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? 7 yes. Motion carries. We're going to adjourn the open session, and the board is going to resume closed session. Resume.